All are welcome. More info can be found by dialing 211. Weather for the day today, could see some rain early and then partly sunny skies with temperatures in the mid to upper 70s. By tomorrow, Saturday, partly sunny, highs in the upper 70s to low 80s. Some things going on across our region. We want to remind you that Mount Itasca has announced that the biathlon trails near Coleraine are closed until September 22nd due to logging on the east side of the hill. And the Buck Lake Improvement Club has their monthly breakfast buffet this Sunday. It's at the Buck Lake Community Center, located 12 miles north of Nashwauk on Highway 65. I'm Heidi Holton. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, and 89.9 Brainerd, people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. It's a minute after 6.
In Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Federal and Utah state authorities are still searching for the suspect wanted in the killing of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. Authorities have released video of the male suspect. Steve Futterman reports from Orem, Utah.
The video shows a man dressed mostly in black running across the top of a building. Bo Mason of the Utah Department of Public Safety narrated the video, describing the suspect's actions when he reached the end of the building.
He's going to climb off the edge and then drop down to the ground. As he did that, he left some palm impressions. There's some smudges, some places we're looking to collect DNA.
Authorities are offering a $100,000 reward for any information that leads to the killer's capture. Utah's Governor Spencer Cox says law enforcement has received more than 7,000 tips. More than 200 interviews have been conducted, but no arrest has been made. For NPR News, I'm Steve Futterman in Orem, Utah.
The federal government collected $30 billion in tariff revenue last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports that's a nearly four-fold increase from this time last year.
A monthly report from the Treasury Department says tariff revenue reached $30 billion last month, up from $8 billion in August of 2024. Tariffs accounted for nearly 9% of all federal revenue last month, but they haven't done much to improve the government's financial health. With a month to go in the fiscal year, the federal government's running a deficit of nearly $2 trillion, and it's had to pay out more than $1 trillion just to cover the interest on the growing federal debt. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Some 300 South Korean citizens are back home. They were detained last week in Georgia by U.S. immigration authorities. The workers were at a Hyundai electric vehicle battery plant. From member station WABE, Sam Greenglass reports the plant has been championed by top Georgia Republicans.
Republicans in Georgia spent years building ties with companies in South Korea, culminating in Hyundai locating a multi-billion dollar electric vehicle plant near Savannah. But the raid last week at the battery facility has put some Republicans like Governor Brian Kemp in a tricky position, says GOP strategist Brian Robinson.
He's got to, on the one hand, consider his politics in Georgia, but also he's got to make sure that the South Koreans feel appreciated and make sure that bridges don't get burned.
The raid is highlighting some tensions between President Trump's immigration crackdown and his push to reinvigorate American manufacturing. For NPR News, I'm Sam Greenglass in Atlanta.
The United Nations Security Council meets today. Members will discuss Russia's incursion into Polish airspace this week. More than a dozen Russian attack drones flew into Poland. Some of these drones were shot down by Polish and NATO aircraft. On Wall Street and pre-market trading, Dow futures are lower. This is NPR. House Republicans have named five GOP members for a new January 6th select subcommittee to investigate the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol. They'll join three Democrats. The new panel is intended to be a response to the original January 6th committee. Republicans have claimed the Democratic-led panel was biased against President Trump. The federally funded preschool program Head Start can keep enrolling migrant children who are illegally in the U.S. A federal judge has blocked the Trump administration from preventing the children from enrolling. That move is part of a broader effort by the Trump administration to block migrants illegally in the U.S. from accessing social services. Pop star Sabrina Carpenter tops this week's Billboard charts. NPR Stephen Thompson reports.
This week, the Billboard Albums chart features just one debut in the top 10, Man's Best Friend by Sabrina Carpenter.
Child, why you always come running on me?
album Man's Best Friend debuts at number one, but Carpenter's success this week runs deeper than that. She also lands two songs in the top five, Manchild, which topped the chart earlier this summer, and her new single, Tears. Tears enters the Billboard singles chart at number three, but it's not alone. Thanks mostly to streaming, all 12 songs from Man's Best Friend land in the top 40. Stephen Thompson, NPR News.
And I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Joyce Foundation, committed to advancing racial equity and economic mobility for the next generation in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. This is NPR.
Well, I've got two brothers and they're in the Marines.
This is Drew Miller from Boiled and Lead urging you to support KAXE and KBXE. Community radio is a lifeline for culture, and these days it's under threat. If you enjoy it, you need to help pay for it because nobody else is going to do it except for you. Please support KAXE and the Summer Pledge Drive.
Make a donation now by visiting our website, kaxe.org, and clicking the word donate, or text donate to 218-326-1234.
Climbing up that old gallows ladder, cried out so gaily for his highway cap and feather. I've always been a lively lad, never
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Coming up, what has 30 days of a National Guard deployment done for crime in the nation's capital?
First, though, we report on the challenge for law enforcement after the murder of Charlie Kirk. Police are searching for the person they suspect fired the fatal shot, and the only description they have is what he was wearing, a black T-shirt, white Converse shoes, and a hat with a triangle on it.
Last night, officials shared photos and a new video showing a suspect's apparent escape. You see him leaping from a roof. Utah Governor Spencer Cox asked for anyone who might recognize the shooter to come forward.
We continue to implore the public to support this investigation and come forward with any information. We need as much help as we can possibly get.
With us now is NPR's Bobby Allen, who's been reporting from Orem, Utah. Bobby, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Michelle.
So you were at the press conference last night on the Utah Valley University campus, and that was where Kirk was killed on Wednesday. What stood out to you?
Yeah, well, the obvious thing is it's now almost 48 hours since Kirk's murder and authorities haven't arrested a suspect, right? This press conference, which was very hastily organized, I think we had like an hour's heads up, was essentially a blinking help needed sign, right? FBI Director Kash Patel stood by as state officials played surveillance video showing, as you mentioned, a person in dark sunglasses, a black shirt, climb off a roof and flee the scene. Utah Governor Spencer Cox says state and federal investigators are working hard to catch this assassin and hold him accountable, but it does not appear that they have located him yet. Cox says they have, however, received a flood of tips from the public.
So far, we've received more than 7,000 leads and tips. I would just note that the FBI hasn't received this many digital media tips from the public since the Boston Marathon bombing.
And that was more than a decade ago. Now, with this investigation, it appears authorities are going to need the public's help even more. Cox said complicated matters is a surge of online disinformation about the shooting. Some distortions, he says, are even being spread by Russian and Chinese bots. Cox said at the briefing that officials are focused on transparency, but then it was interesting that they did not take any questions.
So you've been talking to people in Orem, which is where you are now, people who attended the Kirk event, people who live there. Can you just describe, like, what's the mood there?
Yeah, well, after the shooting on Wednesday, the school closed for the week, so it's been pretty quiet with police tape blocking off portions of the campus that are still considered an active crime scene. There are, of course, gaggles of journalists and TV vans waiting for an update in the investigation. I stopped to talk to Utah Valley University freshman James Jordan, who was walking through campus, and he said he remains pretty rattled.
The man that did shoot him is still undetermined, and how close we live, he could be anywhere. The other night, we had cops at our apartment just doing their protocol, and it was a little unsettling and not knowing for sure how safe we really are.
Well, others in the area assume the shooter is long gone from Utah, so are not as worried.
So turning back to the investigation, do we have any sense of what the next phase looks like?
Yeah, well, investigators recovered a rifle and unused rounds believed to be the shooter's, and that's now being forensically examined in a lab along with palm prints and an impression from the Converse sneakers authorities say the shooter was wearing. Law enforcement gathered this from where the shooter escaped from the roof, right? Investigators will be putting this together with the surveillance footage and any useful public tips they have in hopes of identifying and locating the shooter. State authorities have several times now raised the prospect of this turning into a death penalty case, but the suspect has to be caught before he is prosecuted.
That's NPR's Bobby Allen. Bobby, thank you.
Thanks, Michelle.
People watching the investigation include Juliette Kayyem. She is a former Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security under President Obama and is now a senior lecturer in international security at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I've just been watching the video again. You see a man, I guess it's a man, runs across a roof carrying a bag of some kind maybe, comes to the edge of the roof, climbs down onto a ledge, then leaps to the grass. Mm-hmm. You imagine the person almost breaking a leg on the way down, doesn't happen, runs away. What does this give authorities to go on?
It gives authorities two things. One is obviously just the physical features. He's tall, he's fit, and as you said, he does that jump with almost sort of no consequences. It's a long jump. So he is someone who may have some training. Is he a mountain climber? Is he someone with physical training, military training? The second is, of course, that he clearly did significant reconnaissance of the area. Either he knew it because he's from there, he's a student there, or he had spent some time there. So the FBI is clearly looking back to see if they see someone like him surveying the roof. And that is consistent with, of course, what the tragedy on Wednesday, which is a single shot from a rooftop sniper killed Charlie Kirk.
You mentioned the FBI looking back. Of course, they have records of a lot of people. Yeah. What is the FBI role and what is the state and local role in a case like this?
Normally, and I want to be clear, normally you would have the FBI special agent in charge. So that would be the Utah lead for the FBI taking a very prominent role. Because the way the FBI works, as most federal agencies, is you have a local and regional presence. That was true of the FBI. You've seen a lot of oversight, a lot of tweets, a lot of mistakes made by FBI headquarters. And so you've seen, in this case, Governor Cox of Utah really take a sort of fundamental both political and operational role. We saw that in the press conference last night. The FBI is led by people who were essentially influencers. They had never run an agency like this. And the FBI has been eviscerated through the DOGE process and early retirements. And the head of the Utah division, the special agent in charge, had recently been fired for reasons that were not clear. So I really think that you're seeing the state and local role, even though this may be a federal crime, really prominent at this stage.
And I'll just note Kash Patel, the FBI director, at one point said there was a subject, as he called it, in custody. He said that on social media, turned out to be incorrect. And you mentioned Spencer Cox, the Republican governor of Utah. He's been on this program and now does seem to be an important figure in the response. Mm-hmm. What stands out to you about what he's been saying?
First, he has had a tone of empathy and understanding the place we're in America, that this was a political assassination of a very popular conservative influencer and someone who young people felt very tied to. And he recognizes that moment. He is not steering the investigation to any idea of the motivation, if there is a single motivation. And a lot of these political assassinations, the motivation isn't at all singular, the person, you know, right or left. I compare that to what we have heard, for example, from both the sort of, you know, conservative media apparatus, as well as President Trump, who has sort of early on sort of claimed he knows what the motivation is. The second thing, as Bobby Allen just said, he understands that both domestic and foreign entities are taking advantage of this moment. We are in a moment in which violence has been unleashed. And it needs to be put back. But our enemies, those who want unrest in the United States to use it for political or policy gain, as well as our foreign enemies like China and Russia, are filling the narrative with moments of division.
I want to stick with you for another moment or two here, because there's something that I think is in your area of expertise, reporting we had elsewhere in the program today. Our correspondent, Odette Youssef, has been looking at statistics on extremist violence. She says, historically, there's way more violence from white supremacists, violent white supremacists, than other sources. Now, she says, there may be a shift toward violence from the left. Robert Pape, an academic who studies this, finds a similar pattern. He says, when you look at polling as well, very large numbers of Democrats, not a majority, but a lot of Democrats would seem to approve violence to remove President Trump. And there are also a lot of Republicans in surveys who seem to want the military used against protesters. Yeah. What do you make of that, and what can leaders do?
Yeah, so it is consistent with what we've seen over the last 8 or 10 years, where there was at the beginning, and led by Donald Trump during his first term, a sort of permission structure for talking about violence that, from a leadership perspective, that unleashed a lot of ugliness that then becomes uncontrolled. And that is what I think we're seeing now. Over the last year, we certainly know, or a couple of years, we certainly know, the talk has moved to action. What has been unleashed needs to be contained. That is not happening at the federal level. So what can we do is, you're seeing the kind of leadership, as I was saying, on the state and local level that is saying, essentially, it's not the motivation that matters to us, it's the political violence. Whatever his motivation is, or the person who tried to get Nancy Pelosi, or the person who killed state legislators in Minnesota, it is the violence that has to be shamed and prosecuted. And you're seeing it in lovely ways, if I could say. A lot of universities and colleges, their Republican and Democratic student organizations are putting out joint releases. It's that kind of shaming of the political violence that has to occur on every level. The statement, political assassination is bad, is a period, right? You don't qualify it. You don't say, but they do this, or I hate that person. And we have to realize that that's the only way that we are going to at least try to steer through this period. The other way is, we got to get this guy. It's not just because the longer it takes, the easier it is for him to get away. His freedom right now, his ability to run, is creating oxygen for people to support him. So that's where we are right now.
Juliette Kayyem, former Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security, now a senior lecturer at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Thanks so much for your insights.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
Good morning. You're listening to the Friday Morning Show. We've got What's for Breakfast coming up for you before 8 o'clock. If you're someone who was wanting to join us, you can get in early by making a reservation. Text us at 218-326-1234. The Armory Arts and Events Center in Park Rapids has an open mic night Thursday, September 18th. The doors open at 6 with performances starting at 7 o'clock. Support for KEXE comes from the Grand Rapids Players. They present The Great Gatsby September 26th through the 28th, October 3rd through 5th at the Rife Center in Grand Rapids. Celebrating the 100th anniversary since its original publishing. Friday through Saturday shows at 7, Sundays at 2. Tickets available at grplayers.com. Maybe some rain early, then partly sunny skies and temperatures in the mid to upper 70s. Going on tomorrow, Mixed Precipitation Opera and Theater Group is presenting Pickup Truck Opera, Volume 5. It's outside. It's at 3 p.m. at the Mask and Rose Theater in Pupaski. We've got more news coming up an hour from now. Marshall Helmberger, the news from Northeastern Minnesota. Thank you so much to our listeners. We've raised over $162,000 during the federal funding cuts crisis and the rescission. We're working hard to keep the programming you love going strong. Every action helps. Donate, listen, share our work. Visit KEXE.org.
PR comes from this station and from Fisher Investments. As a fiduciary, Fisher Investments is obligated to act in their client's best interest. Learn more at fisherinvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss. From the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the principle that helping someone else less fortunate is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at lodestarfoundation.org. From BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy and helping clients find balance. Clients are matched with one of 30,000 therapists for online therapy from anywhere at betterhelp.com/public. And from the sustaining members of this NPR station.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Amy Martinez. A fake documentary about a fake band is getting a real sequel, one that's long overdue. More than 40 years ago, the mockumentary This Is Spinal Tap followed the ups and downs of a once famous heavy metal group as it launched a comeback tour. Spinal Tap 2, The End Continues, reunites the band for one last concert planned for New Orleans.
I'm curious as to why you chose New Orleans.
There was a cancellation, and a date opened up at the arena.
Oh, really? There was like all of a sudden?
All of a sudden,
who was supposed to be there?
An evening with Stormy Daniels.
I spoke with Michael McKeon, who plays lead singer David St. Hubbins, and director Rob Reiner.
So, Rob, let's catch up with where the band is, because things have not gone very well with the band since the last time we saw them. So where are they in this film?
Nigel is running a cheese and guitar shop where he sells cheese and guitars. And Derek is the proprietor of a glue museum that just features the history of glue.
Now, Michael, okay, so your character, David St. Hubbins, is still writing music, but not exactly heavy metal. Let's listen to what he is up to now.
I'm just working on a score now for a film.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a horror film that takes place in a retirement community. Yeah. It's called Night of the Assisted Living Dead.
Essentially, he's kind of a lonely guy. And I think all the pride that he exhibits talking about these other projects, the scoring, the podcasts, and the bad horror movies, I think he would rather be doing something with a bunch of guys and having a great time.
Music is really what creates the bond. And even though they hadn't spoken or hadn't played in 15 years, it's like old friends. You know, you get together and you fall right back in to what you are comfortable with. And the music unites them. That's the good part of it. They love to play together. What Chris used to call schnadling, which is, you know, just the interact back and forth.
Christopher Guest, that's who you're talking about.
And that's where the joy comes from.
Rob, that's the first time I've ever heard that word schnadling, but I understood it immediately. It makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
So the band has a new manager, and he's got some pretty interesting ideas on how to make this comeback tour a success. Let's listen to one of those ideas.
If this is the final gig that Spinal Tap do, then what we need to do is secure your legacy. Now, the simplest, most effective way
that we could do that is that if during the gig at least one, but ideally no more than two of you, were to die, it really allows for a sort of flowering of...
Do you mean pretend die?
It's very difficult to do a memorial concert when the person is still alive. That's just a sort of rule of thumb.
Would you settle for a coma?
That's a great bit of thinking outside, well, a literal box, I suppose, actually. Yeah.
You're dealing with Chris Addison here, who's this great, great British comic actor. And we didn't know that was coming.
Oh, no kidding.
No, the whole movie is improvised, so nobody knows what anybody's going to say.
It's a little tough to keep a straight face, but he was perfect. He was so right on the money. And the coma seemed like a pretty good alternative as far as I was concerned.
Did Spinal Tap in this film maybe not think about getting together in a happy way, or just like, hey, we're contractually obligated for one more turn?
Well, I think they all approached it with trepidation. They were all concerned about what had gone on between the three of them. But eventually, like we say, they started to fall into the music. Of the one little bit of contention where Paul McCartney tries to offer his opinion.
You know, I was listening to what you're doing, and it's going along great.
It's got a nice tempo,
It seemed to fall apart.
So it's just...
That's the bit. Just lose that bit and go back to where you were.
We'll take it under advisement.
What does that mean?
Elton John was also in this. I mean, it just seemed like they loved being part of this not real world.
They did. That was interesting. Paul McCartney loved being in the movie. They immediately said yes when I asked them to come aboard. But Elton John said he really liked being a part of it. Of course, I don't know if he liked what happens to him, but we're not going to talk about that. You'll see the movie.
So, okay, I want to turn back to the original Spinal Tap film for just a moment, Rob. That was the first film that you ever directed, Rob, if I'm not mistaken, right? I mean, so...
That's correct, yeah.
How did that film set the standard for the mockumentary genre? Because I think a lot of the mockumentaries since have taken a lot of cues from what you did.
Yeah, but we didn't mean to set any standard. It was just the natural way to tell this particular story. The critics got it, but most of the public didn't get it. They just didn't understand it. People thought it was a real band, and they didn't understand why I would make a movie about a band nobody ever heard of. It took a while before people caught on to it and started realizing, oh, I get it, it's satire. Since then, because over the years it became successful, it's something that you see, The Office or Abbott Elementary or Parks and Rec.
Modern Family, yeah. Michael, how long did you have to go before people started to understand that Spinal Tap wasn't a real band? I mean, did you have to explain to people that, hey, I made a film, not joined a band?
I didn't encounter those people personally. A lot of people who played in bands got a copy of that movie on VHS, and it was part of the culture. It became part of their culture because it was about them. Not terribly flattering, but they got a kick out of it.
If you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Oh. 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
these and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
I talked to Sting when I first met him. He said, I've seen this film over and over and over again. Every time I look at it, I don't know whether to laugh or cry because it was so close to what all these rock musicians experienced.
That is actor Michael McKean and director Rob Reiner. Their new film is Spinal Tap 2, The End Continues. Rob, Michael, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Big bottom, drive me out of my mind. How could I leave this behind?
This is NPR News.
Listen to be immersed.
Some Salvadorian rum. Some horchata.
Listen to be transported.
After a 3-hour flight, you land in Guantanamo.
Flight attendants prepare for arrival.
Listen to get perspective.
And if that's what mattered, what didn't matter? What was just noise?
Listen to All Things Considered from NPR News.
We'll be right back.
You can hear All Things Considered coming up this afternoon at 4 o'clock. It's here on People Powered, KAXE. It is 6:30. I'm Heidi Holton with John Bauer. I don't want to be one of those people, but I kind of can't believe you never saw Spinal Tap.
I haven't.
You know, don't you hate it when people tell you, you haven't seen it?
I know.
Because then it's usually too late if someone tells you you got to see it. It like doesn't quite go over. But for those who know, you know. To have another movie with Christopher Guest and Harry Shearer.
So they are going to have another movie?
It is. It's out. That's what this story was just about.
Oh.
Yeah, the new movie's out. Rob Reiner, Paul Schaefer was in the original.
Paul Schaefer in the band?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no, not the main band, but he played a promoter in the New York scene or something. But yeah, very, very clever, funny, these sort of improvised mockumentaries that later went on, Christopher Guest became famous for.
Mm-hmm.
Best in Show,
yeah.
Waiting for Guffman. Anyway.
But I know that feeling because I say to people, one of my favorite movies is Little Miss Sunshine. I say, you haven't seen it? What's wrong with you? Yeah. You got to see it.
And it's terrible when you, actually that usually makes me go the opposite way. I'm like, I'm not going to do it. I'm just sort of belligerent.
I'm not going
to
do it.
Go that way with books too, where if someone says you have to read it. So I try to only use that sparingly myself to other people because I know what that's like, you know, that you got to read this book.
Speaking of books, what have you read? What are you reading?
Well, I told you about the one that I think you should read. Sipsworth.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful book. I'm waiting. I know a couple people I know who are reading it, and I want feedback. I have one friend who has read it, and it wasn't as thrilled by it. So, you know, to each their own. But let's see. What am I reading right now? I'm going off on a little junket next week. So I did, as you always do, I went and got a stack of books yesterday at the library. Very excited about that.
Have you ever been in a book club?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem you, though.
No.
Okay.
Don't know why. I get kicked out of them when I get in them or something.
Well, yeah.
Hope you're having a good morning. We've got National Native News that is coming up for you next. And we've got music and conversation throughout the day. And, John, we're featuring a book. Did you get time to read this?
Absolutely. Scrim.
Tell me about it.
It's just a little dog that was rescued from being euthanized and just became a celebrity, an unknown celebrity in New Orleans. It was
a real dog, and
ran away numerous times.
Scrim might be still alive.
That is not said in that book.
Okay.
I don't believe.
All right. I did a search, but you never know.
It's about perseverance, and it's a very good book. The whole city of New Orleans rallied around this dog trying to find it, and
the story of Scrim, you know, is in this new kids book, but it was also like in the New Yorker and the New York Times.
Oh, yeah.
And Washington
Wall Street
Post.
Journal.
Everyone was watching out for Scrim. So I thought it'd be right up your alley.
It is.
And we'll be talking with the author coming up before 9 o'clock. We'll also talk sports. I was sort of out late last night with former intern Erica Coda. So I only
Are you a little rusty this morning?
Maybe, but I saw the fourth quarter. When I got home,
they blew him away in the end. It was close all the way.
What a low scoring game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had to have an emergency phone call with Scott Hall yesterday because I just needed to know, like, what is the normal deal?
I think they played too many games.
Do they intentionally? I was very, he gave me some great advice and gave me context.
Intentionally what?
I felt like not necessarily last night's game, but the one they lost earlier this week. It's just like, are they even trying? It seemed like they were chasing the other team around, the Indiana team.
They were down by like 20-2 at one point or something in that game. I watched that one.
Yeah. And so he was talking about how he thought that the Lynx had really set this precedent this season and that the rest of the teams have really risen and there's so many great teams out there and they're got the number of how the Lynx play, but also stuff that I don't see about, I didn't think it was necessarily just because Nafisha Collier didn't play that night, but he thought it really did. He was kind of playing your defense and,
it's a big,
you know, so gave me, and they, I think they're just resting them. I think it's going to be great. playoff, but it's not guaranteed. I don't know. I had sort of a heartbreak. I needed to talk to someone about it because I thought they were doing so good all season, and now they're
That's kind of what the problem is. They've done so well. They can coast the last four games, and I think that's what they're doing. They're not giving 100%.
Yep.
And the coach probably isn't happy with that, but it'll all be fine.
I had
friends at
the game last night, and they gave out pink wigs.
Oh.
To everyone for the stud buds, you know, they have the pink hair. Courtney.
Oh
Williams
and
the t-shirt.
But they went to a different color.
No, they're pink. They're both pink.
They were blue the other day. I swear.
Early in the season, they were blue.
They were blue.
Early in the season, they were blue. So you probably saw an older photo. They were switching back and forth, and then there was a point where they both went pink.
All right.
And then other team members off and on will have some pink. Kayla McBride has had some pink. And coach.
They give out wigs.
Coach has said that if they win the championship, she's dyeing her hair pink.
Ah, so nice.
We'll see what happens. But anyway. Sports page will be coming up after 8 o'clock. You can always weigh in by texting us at 218-326-1234. Let's take a look at the weather.
Chance of rain and thunderstorms before noon today. It looks like mostly cloudy, highs 74 to 80. South winds 5 to 10, gusts up to 20. Cloudy tonight with patchy fog. Speaking of fog, 56 to 61. Saturday, partly sunny with highs in the upper 70s to low 80s. And Sunday looks like highs in the upper 70s to 80s. We have had fog, wet fog.
I drove before 6 a.m. to Bemidji in that fog the other day, Wednesday morning. Wow. I've never gone through that. Because it's often this time of year when I'm headed to Bemidji early, there's some fog in the lower lowlands kind of thing. And entire way I could barely see.
It's okay if it's partly that way because it's beautiful, but when it consumes you, it's kind of hard. I want to thank the 17th annual Community Connect Thursday, September 18th from 11 to 3 at the Yanmar Arena in Grand Rapids, featuring over 50 social service agencies providing information on housing, energy, county assistance, and more. All are welcome. More information can be found by dialing 211.
Coming up on National Native News, we are learning about a Native American college that has had a special dedication to preserve the history of how at least 100,000 Japanese Americans were forced into so-called internment camps during World War II or concentration camps across the United States. Stay tuned for that story. We've got talkbacks, we've got the set list, live music with Malachi Coons, and we want you to join us. Text in this morning, 218-326-1234.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. During World War II, at least 100,000 Japanese Americans were forced into so-called internment camps across the U.S., seen by the government as a potential threat within America's borders. Memories of the mass incarceration still burns hot for former prisoners and their families. Senior reporter Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire reports on a Native American college that held a special dedication to preserve that history.
About 200 people gathered at the Snow Country Prison Japanese American Memorial last week at the United Tribes Technical College in Bismarck. Taiko and Native drummers performed together as dignitaries honored the 1,850 Japanese men who were confined here back when the site was known as Fort Lincoln. Satsuki Ina was born in a California internment camp in 1944, and her father, Itaru, was kept at Fort Lincoln in 1945 through 1946. Her book, The Poet and the Silk Girl, is a memoir based on her parents' letters, diaries, and her father's haiku. The memorial is the culmination of 25 years that Ina and the UTTC worked together to preserve this history.
There were trees that the Japanese American prisoners had planted, and there was this story that there were ghosts that wandered around, and that when the wind blew on these trees, it sounded like somebody was crying. So there was actually a healer that would come every once in a while and bless those trees. So when I heard stories like that, I felt like the memory of their presence was really being protected and honored.
Ina says there are efforts by the Trump administration to erase or dismiss past atrocities against communities of color. So she sees the UTTC's support, including giving some of its property to the memorial, as key to keeping history accurate and the government accountable.
This is in many ways an act of solidarity with the Native people and the Japanese Americans. And the lesson is, it's in our collaboration, our solidarity with each other, that we strengthen our truths and stand in opposition to efforts to erase our history, to alter it, to rewrite our narratives in ways that don't talk about the truth.
At the end of the dedication ceremony, a Japanese and Native flute player performed together as visitors placed paper cranes on the names of those incarcerated at Fort Lincoln. These were inscribed on slate tiles that once lined the barracks. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull in Bismarck.
Over the summer at the University of South Dakota, 20 high school students attended the annual Oscar House Summer Art Institute, learning from each other and renowned Native American artists. The camps inspired by artist Oscar Howe, who paved the way for Native artists to challenge stereotypes, teaching at the university for more than two decades. Instructor Keith Braveheart helped students learn about Howe's approach to art, recounting his first experience with the Trailblazers' legacy.
It felt like the work was alive, like it was physically breathing, like it was pulsating. And I know that it could have been an optical illusion because of the way that he designs his work, but I also later would truly believe that it was imbued with a Dakota spirit.
Braveheart studied in one of the Institute's many iterations as a student.
I see this potential that what was my path, my journey, what that could be like, might be similar to a next generation of an artist, a younger artist.
A citizen of the Oglala Sioux tribe, Braveheart says he thinks creating those future pathways is what Oscar Howe envisioned. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
my window and let the light come in. I step outside in the middle of the morning and in the evening again.
.646, a little Jason Isbell to keep us going this morning, middle of the morning. We're seeing some odd colored skies out here on the banks of the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids. Pink on my side.
Yeah, I got slate gray, almost a purple to the west.
We do have in the forecast, that's John Bauer, I'm Heidi Holton, possible rain and thunderstorms before noon today.
Before noon, yeah.
We'll see what happens. 74 to 80 for our highs. South winds 5 to 10, gusting up to 20. Two nights ago, was that right? Wednesday night, it might have been my last swim in the lake. Maybe I'll go this weekend. It was like a cold plunge, man. It was, wow.
Was it invigorating? Did you feel fresh?
Yes, I swam, felt great. It just, there's a lot of, when you take that dive in, when you're underwater, a lot of swear words, that initial contact. Felt great, to tell you the truth, but I don't think it's a regular thing for me.
We want to thank the Grand Rapids Players for their support, presenting the Great Gatsby September 26th to 28th and October 3rd through the 5th at the Rife in Grand Rapids, celebrating the 100th anniversary since its original publishing. Friday, Saturday's shows are 7 and Sundays at 2. Tickets available at grplayers.com. Also want to thank Sewing Room, hosting the Cultivating Communities Summit, a two-day gathering to explore belonging, workforce inclusion, environmental justice, and more, taking place at the Gitchazibi Center for the Arts in Brainerd, September 22nd and 23rd. Registration available at sewingroom.org. That's S-O-W-I-N-G.
Our question of the week, we're looking for your favorite TV shows as we head into the fall that can be new or old. Give us your picks. Text 218-326-1234. People sending in great ideas. You know, sometimes you need someone to tell you about a show. Are you watching anything right now?
Well, no, because they're not starting new, you know. Chicago PD, I love that one.
Oh.
I love that
you're
one.
You're so old school. I love that.
I do.
Streaming shows, like, start at various times.
Oh,
so at first I was like, what? What do you mean they're not starting?
See, I'm talking network. I thought this was network shows.
Well, no,
it could be anything.
TV, yes. Yeah. Episode, but network's fine. Chicago PD, is that the one?
Yeah.
And I watched the one
SUV, Special Victims Unit.
Yes.
SVU.
I watched the Chicago, the hospital, Chicago Med.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
And then you got Chicago Fire prior to
that. Yeah, I didn't want to get into the other ones, even though they do crossovers all the time.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I just can't. Because I don't even know why I watch Chicago Med.
Is there a handsome guy on there?
No.
There's got to be.
No, not really.
Really?
No.
Hospital ones intrigue you. Why? There's so many, though.
Yeah.
How can you be different?
I never watched Grey's Anatomy. Never saw that one. But I do love the new one, and there is a new season coming out with Noah Wiley, The Pitt. Was on
Noah
Amazon.
Wiley? Where's he been?
Working.
Has he?
Yeah.
I haven't seen him anywhere since. Didn't you perform with Clooney back in the day? Is that the same guy?
Yeah, he was on ER.
Yeah.
And he did this series that came out last year that was, it's called The Pit, and it's the Pittsburgh ER. And it is, the show is done, you know, sort of like 24 used to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1 hour of one day where there's a catastrophe and the ER has to respond. And it was deemed like the most realistic ER sort of show. And part of the reason was, so when Noah Wiley was on ER, there was a resurgence in people that went into the medical field.
Ah.
And it was this big thing. And he really got sort of into that work of, you know, being the kind of celebrity and encouraging people. Well, after the pandemic, people left. because of the pressures and everything. Yeah. Not as many people going into the health field. And so that was part of why he wanted to do this again.
Wow.
To get more people.
Well, Noah Wiley.
It's a good show, though, despite all that stuff.
Noah Wiley kind of falls into the John Tesh thing for me. I mean, I saw he's still around. You know, John Tesh's musician guy?
Yeah, but John, really?
Yeah.
John, I mean, Noah Wiley, like, has won acting awards.
I haven't
he's really
him.
Great.
I haven't seen him since ER.
He directs this. I mean, he's like a solid, not a John Tesh in my mind, but if he is in yours.
But he's a director, not so much an actor anymore. Is that?
Yeah, he stars in it.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh, boy.
It's great.
You got to get out more.
It's a great show. We'd love to hear from you.
What other names have you been coming up with as of late?
What
shows
TVs?
Are people looking forward to?
Well, we'll see if they're in our talkbacks, but I know on Wednesday someone was suggesting this Canadian show called Corner Gas. I've heard about that one before. That's a lot of fun. And I need to just sort of
no, that's all right. I was just wondering if there's any dominating ones that everybody watches.
No, I think there are so many. Oh, so Laura told us about something she watches on YouTube, a show called The Listers, and it's a documentary about two 20-somethings that decide to take a year to birdwatch, traveling all over, and they go to this Sac Zim Bog is one of the places. She said, super fun. They had never been birdwatchers before. We heard from someone earlier this week when we asked the question on Tuesday morning who said that don't know much about TV shows, but I do know that John Latimer is the Marlon Brando of phenology.
He certainly is. Now, I don't know if we talked about this, talk about new things. You remember when we had Axel play that little young kid play lead guitar? He had a guitar in his band for the festival a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Just a young kid, 12 years old, kind of a prodigy.
Yep.
Well, his dad just sent me something. They're in a series on Prime called The Vagabonds, and it's actually his band. And
wow.
Yeah, they're cool. Moving up in the world.
We just heard from Brenda who says The Pit is 10 out of 10. Totally the bomb.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a good show. It's hard to take. I think I even watched.
Is that a network? I'm sorry, I didn't.
Amazon.
Okay.
Amazon Prime. Yeah. Really fun show. I'm also excited because
A Top Chef or something? Baking?
Baking. There's a new season on Netflix, but I'm waiting. There's been at least two, if not three. I'm waiting. We're going to watch it. That's one show that Tom and I will watch together. But it's so fun if you have more than one in front of you, right? That you can have a little
binge on it. The baking show the same one, same name?
Great British
same
Baking
premise?
Show. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's the most lovely thing you will ever see. It really is. It's British people. It's not about competition.
There's no fighting. There's no crying.
Oh, no. The difficult part, it's like you don't even remember who won that episode because it's all about having to say goodbye to the one that is going home. And then I just sort of love, like, at the end, whoever wins, they get a glass cake stand and a thing of flowers. And they are so happy.
Hmm.
It's time for our talkback segment of the Friday morning show.
Speaking of flowers, Margo Price tossing the flowers. That was fantastic.
I know.
A bunch of roses. That was beautiful at the festival. Very emotional.
Did you get one?
I was too far away. I tried to catch her, but I was 40 yards away.
Our esteemed volunteer Jim Gallagher got one.
Did he?
And I'm so curious, Jim, what are you like going to put it in a book and say, you know, flatten it once it's, you know, I mean, how are you going to commemorate or keep that rose going?
Yeah, you can't get an autograph on a rose.
I loved seeing there's some photos out there of kids who got the roses. Oh,
I loved her outfit. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm. We've got lots of great photos from that day. If you were following along on the socials, and then we'll be getting some of those photos up online. What a great community event. Thank you to everyone who was there. We'd love to hear from you what you think of it. You can text 218-326-1234.
As Heidi was saying when I rudely interrupt her, it's time for the talkback segment of the morning show. You can email us at comments@kaxe.org or text us 218-326-1234.
Thanks to everyone who has been supporting us, whether that means coming to Riverfest or helping us through the crisis of losing federal funding. People are continuing to donate each and every day. Patrick from Mountain View, California, donated last weekend and said, love Green Cheese Trivia and happy to support KEXE.
And Mark from the Twin Cities texted, nice job, KEXE staff. Excellent Riverfest. I cannot imagine the work that goes into making an event run that smoothly.
Kudos to Kari Hedlund, who keeps that whole thing running. Nicole from Balsam was listening to Headwaters on Monday and said, ooh, thank you for the old school In Excess this morning, Andrew Dzingel. Can tune in this morning at 9 for Headwaters with Malachi Coons.
And Scott from Cotton sent us a nice card. He said, I must congratulate the whole station on excellent content, amazing personalities, both paid and volunteers, and the true feelings of community expressed here in our woods in Cotton. It is lovely to hear and even interact with this community. Thank you for all of your efforts to keep KAXE a key part of our large rural areas, feeling of shared experiences and reliance on each other. This is so crucial right now.
Jim and Jean donated online yesterday and wrote, we're longtime listeners who appreciate the importance of what KAXE provides to the community, specifically the locally produced programming from phonology to music and, of course, green cheese. It's tough when government funding is cut, but that just means we all have to step up in a bigger way to keep KAXE thriving. Thanks to all the volunteers that make KAXE the best.
And we also received an online donation from David yesterday. He said, I live in Minneapolis, but remember fondly my drives north, of which one of the highlights was turning my car radio dial to KAXE. Couldn't wait to hear what you guys were cooking. Rock on, friends. How many times have we heard that story, huh? Can't wait to turn it on to feel like you're getting home.
Coming up, we'll have local news. Up first, we'll hear about some of the live music in our region.
This is the set list on KAXE, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are looking at shows Thursday through Saturday, September 11th through the 13th in Grand Rapids, Aiken, Coleraine, and Big Fork. First up, folk singer-songwriter Rachel Kilgore is coming to the Co-House in Grand Rapids Thursday at 7:30 p.m. The Duluth singer won the 2017 Careville New Folk Contest and most recently released the album My Father Loved Me in 2023, which explored her relationship with her late father. She is a 2025 McKnight Music Fellow. It is Rachel Kilgore this Thursday at the Co-House in Grand Rapids. On Friday, Jay Bell and the Lazy Susan Band are playing The Terrace in downtown Aiken at 7 p.m. An Americana and rock and roll band that features a horn section, B3 Hammond, and twangy guitars, they've released 6 albums since forming in 2001. Jay Bell and the Lazy Susan Band in Aiken Friday night. On Saturday, the Bugle Boys are playing at Smoke on the Water in Coleraine at 6 p.m. A stripped-down duo of vocalist and guitarist Clay Fulton and the drummer from his band The Lost 40, the Bugle Boys play a stomping and rowdy brand of folk blues music. Saturday in Coleraine at Smoke on the Water. Finally, Sam Miltich and friends are playing at the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork, Saturday at 7 p.m. The Militici New Music from the Old Country Show will feature the jazz group's take on Balkan and other Eastern European folk music, a style Miltich explored on his 2019 album, Peasants with Torches. Sam Miltich and friends in Big Fork this Saturday. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and we'll post the latest edition every Wednesday at KAXE.org.
Coming up, we've got Local News Up North Report. That is available as a podcast. I don't know if you knew that, John.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Lots of things that you can get through digitally about KAXE, read in-depth stories. We get to hear the headlines on the Up North Report, but you can learn more about those stories at KAXE.org. We just heard from Jim Gallagher. He said, a rose for Margot Price. That made my whole month. The rose resides on my dashboard where I see it every day.
Dashboard?
It makes me smile. Jim, I wish it was in like your lapel or something.